Now, our next presentation continues with the theme of entertainment and our place and our role in that entire industry. It's not unseen, but all the barriers we cannot see. And it comes about because this gentleman has played a key role in many aspects of getting blind people into the entertainment industry, but more recently with Netflix in their recent work to portray blind people. He's no stranger to this community. He's been an instructor of blind individuals, even has led programs for the blind in various states like Pennsylvania. This convention has often talked about the importance of getting blind representation on the big screen. This gentleman has been working from the inside to help the people who are already in the circle of influence in the entertainment industry know why the involvement of blind people is important, and I thought it would be important to invite him here to talk about it. Now, sorry, Joe, we didn't get any great walk-up music for you because we wanted to show you all this important little piece of film to introduce him. So here's Joe Strecce.
This process, I probably assumed that I would cast a sighted actor to play this protagonist who is blind. And I'm embarrassed admitting that, but I also recognize that that presumption was the outgrowth of 100 years of Hollywood storytelling culture and the assumptions that it made about how experience was represented. And of course, those representations shape expectations, and it becomes a kind of perceived reality, but it's not real. And those representations can change, and eventually culture can too.
And we did an international search. We saw thousands of auditions from around the world.
Joe Strecce.
And we found someone special.
The fact that
Mark Riccobono.
The art of this drama really leans into the lived experience of blind people is what makes it so powerful.
He said, I want you to be a creative partner, and I want to sit down and talk to you as an equal, and I want you to bring to this character what you want to bring to her.
I am more of a casual Braille reader. I tend to scrub.
Aria Mielaberti.
Which is something that I'm going to carry over to Marie because she didn't have training. Like, a lot of kids today have a lot of training. Like, some little kid will watch me read Braille on screen and know that it's real. And it will change their life. Maybe I would have been more inclined to Braille or more comfortable with my cane. I would have not wanted to hide as much when I was little if I'd had that success. I've never seen myself represented on screen before. Mm. I get to do that for some kid.
I knew that I needed to cast a girl and a young woman to play Marie, and I wanted that character's experience to be portrayed by someone who knew it in their bones, in their DNA. And in having walked that road.
It takes a person with very strong character to take a step back and say, you know what, maybe I've been thinking about this the wrong way. And then to take the risk to go boldly in that direction where other people are not going. Sean should really be celebrated and honored for that as an ally, but more importantly, for the impact that those decisions are going to have on his work and the works of others in the entertainment industry in the future.
I knew that I was going to have to be Aria's teacher on the very steep learning curve of acting as the lead in a big Hollywood show. I expected that, but I didn't expect to be taught. I didn't expect to be inspired and to learn every day. And I am forever grateful for that. I want you to know sincerely, I've not had a moment like this, and this is one I won't forget, and I really, really thank you. Thank you.
A photo of Sean and Aria. White color streams fuse into a red capital letter N, Netflix.
Hey, Hello, Federationists. It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Everett, Beth, Chris, all the folks who made that possible, made it possible for me to be here. I'm a resident of West Virginia now, so I think I've been in West Virginia's NFB, Pennsylvania, Florida, New Jersey. So I'm trying to cover most of the states. But it's great to be here, great to be at convention and speaking about entertainment and employment, really. Like that panel earlier hits home for me because I'm passionate about people who are blind or low vision getting employment and being employed. And even before that passion, I started looking for myself in TV and film, looking for myself being represented and not to date myself. Back in the day, I worked at a video store, so it's kind of like Netflix, but it's a building you go into, and there's these shelves, and there are boxes in front of tapes, and if the tape's not behind the box, you can't watch it. So kind of like Netflix, but different. So I spent my high school years working in that store. But my undergraduate is around communications and media, and I hit a hard place coming out of college trying to get into the world of media. I started out around 2001, around September 11th, in the New York, New Jersey area. And our economy wasn't doing great, and I lost my job. And I would go in for interviews, and I wasn't confident. I wasn't like many of you here. And you young people that are learning the skills that make you independent, I came to my skills later, and after college. And it made such an impact in my life. I will never go anywhere without my cane. My cane is my tool. Braille as well. Like I was just filming in Connecticut and in a place with horrible cell coverage. And if I couldn't read Braille and I couldn't use my cane, I wouldn't have been able to get around where I was staying in an unfamiliar place if I didn't have those skills. So credit to all those folks providing those skills out there. As I said, I wanted to see myself, and they reached out to me while I was working on another show called for Apple TV Plus called C. I don't know if anyone saw C. Seesaw. Oh, yeah. Up and down. Well, you know, there are lots of shows out there and lots of streaming networks. It's hard to keep track of them, truthfully. I worked 3 seasons on that show. Started off as an associate producer to co-producer to co-executive producer in the season 3. And right in the beginning, my first interview working to find out about the project, and I was working for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania at the time, and they're telling me about it, and this guy, this director, Francis Lawrence, he directed 4 out of 5 Hunger Game films, you know, one of those small projects, right? I heard it was decent, you know? Yeah. Good books, too, right? But I was talking to him, and my first question during this conversation was, are you going to hire actors who are blind or low vision? Because when I first worked on a show called Marvel's Daredevil when they were creating it for Netflix. And the folks who would tell people what people who are blind would do were sighted people. And I was like, I was helping them recruit people, and I recruited people who are blind or low vision, but also sighted people, because those were the people prior doing it. And they interviewed all these people who are blind or low vision and sighted people. And at the end of the process, they're like, why don't you interview? And I'm like, I have a job. But sure, why not? And I ended up getting that job. And my first question was, before they hired me, was, is the actor blind? And they're like, no. And I think this was like 2013. It wasn't very common. And I was like, okay. And later on, one of the conversations was, will it be audio described? And they're like, what's that? And they're like, does Netflix have audio description? I'm like, no. And I'm like, well, I guess I won't be able to watch the show I work on. Awesome. Yeah. So I started out advising around like the set decoration, props, the scripts, working with the show and training the lead actor as I would train people who are blind or low vision in the past, whether in New Jersey or in Florida or somewhere else, how I travel, how other people travel. And my master's is from Florida State around teaching children who are blind or visually impaired, orientation and mobility, and a specialty in transition from school to work. And I always look at it as teaching the skills that people who are blind use in everyday life. And even those folks that I've worked with who are, and on C, we brought on over three seasons, 35 actors who are blind or low vision. I don't know if we're the most out there, but that's a lot. And most of those roles were recurring, which means they were in more than one episode. And on that show, I got to work behind the scenes besides the scripts, working with the blocking of every scene in the show from episode 4 on. In season 1, working with the directors closely, working with the actors, and then season 2 taking more of a role. And all of this led to connecting to this project, All the Light We Cannot See. I'll be honest. I got the phone call from the executive producers, and they're like, three people suggested we reach out to you. Netflix, Stephen Knight, who's the creator of C, and it was wrote the first few episodes. He's also created Peaky Blinders, and he was going to write the episodes. And also the writer and showrunner for season 2 and 3, Jonathan Tropper, who I worked with, he wrote Adam Project, a small little film for Netflix. You may have heard of it, you know, Adam Project, Ryan Reynolds. He might be up and coming too. But they reached out and they asked me, and I'm like, I haven't read the book yet, but I will. And this was on, I think, like February 22nd of 2020. There was something happening around that time, you know. And they called on like a Thursday or Friday. I read the book 4 times over the weekend. And on Monday, I met with them and had a formal conversation about it. And I read all the stuff online about critiques about it, including from the National Federation of the Blind of the book. And I told them there are things that we will have to change from the book. Because any project I work on, I want to see blindness respected. We are a small population. Persons with disabilities are about 25%, 25 to 27% of the population. We're even smaller. We're like 2%. And if you are going to portray us or show us in media, you have a responsibility to show us in a way that lifts us up, not tears us down. I learned in my undergraduate at East Carolina University in North Carolina, go Pirates, arr, you know. I learned that there are phases to how minority populations migrate in media. And these 4 phases, first is non-representation. Second is ridicule or comical. So we're often the butt of the joke. We're made fun of. Third is regulatory or authority. So we're put in positions of power, like lawyer, judge, doctor, something that legitimizes these characters. And finally, full range. And it's a process. And this has been replicated around the LGBTQI+ population. And I use it to look at the world of disability, looking at people who are blind or low vision. And you see, if you look back at television, and we studied it, taking on gender, we took on race and ethnicity, and I looked at disability and blindness and how we're portrayed. And most often, we're seen in a hospital bed. We're seen as asking for money on the side of the road, or we're just walking by, and that's it. Someone's helping us maybe cross the road. You know, they're not showing people like everyone in this room who are living their lives independently out there in the world. How many of you are working? We work, right? If we're not working, we want to work, and we're not shown that way. And I'm proud to work on projects where we show people working, who have jobs, have lives. We're not shown as romantic interests. You know, on C, we got to show our characters as romantic. We got to show them as good guys, heroes, villains, warriors. In all the light we cannot see, Marie Lore is a hero. Marie Lore is a hero. And not just because she's blind. It has really, blindness is part of the story. Part of it is really about a father and a daughter navigating World War II. It's historical fiction. If you haven't seen the limited series on Netflix, it's 4 episodes, easy to digest, 1 hour each. I suggest you watch it. You know, I don't get anything out of it, but please watch it. I'm just saying. If you're not a Netflix subscriber, borrow your friends and watch it. I don't know. Don't tell them I said that. You know? So when we were creating this show, we had conversations, and we started talking about scripts and what we wanted in it, and we wanted more episodes, and we ended up with 4. We wanted 6. We got 4, and figuring out what story is going to be told, and realizing the opportunity around the character Marie Lore. So we did a larger focus than the book, which is a brilliantly written book, a Pulitzer Prize winning in 2015 by Anthony Doerr, really nice guy from Idaho. Go Idaho. When working with them and we started focusing, we started the casting process. And if you don't know anything about casting, and for these big projects, we cast all over the world. We had casting teams on different continents. We were at European, South America, North America, Australia, New Zealand, and Asia. And we're figuring out, and when you advertise an opportunity and preferred hiring a person who's blind or low vision, we started with the young Marie Lore. Everyone who wears glasses says they're blind or visually impaired. I'm just going to tell you that. Part of my work is being a detective to figure out who is actually legally blind. And I'm like, if you take off your glasses, that doesn't count. I'm like, come on. So figuring that out, or if you have vision in just one eye, that doesn't count. And so without asking directly, I figure out how to decide that. And we had hundreds of auditions for that first part, but we found this. We came down to 2 little girls, one out of Wales and one out of the U.S., and this little girl from Wales was just, her name is Nell Sutton. She was legally blind at the time. She's now totally blind. She's lost the rest of her vision just in the last couple of months. Just the most adorable. She was 7 at the time. Now she's like, she just turned 10 maybe. She is the cutest thing. And we pushed for her. We saw how engaging she was. And Sean saw her audition, and she just melted his heart. And virtually, they're connecting and practicing. And at first, you know, she's a 7-year-old kid. There were concerns. She'd never been on a film set. And I've worked with a lot of child actors on different shows and worked with adult actors as well, whether blind or low vision or not. And it's a learning experience going to a big set, a film set. How many of you have clapped if you've been on a film set before or TV set? Yeah, most people have not had that opportunity. So part of my work is also making sure they're ready for that experience. So I spent a week in Wales with my assistant who audio describes every take on set for me. She's a choreographer. I have different assistants for different projects. But they look at the little details of movement because there are differences between someone who's low vision and someone who's totally blind. And we have to make a decision. So we hired Nell, and Nell nailed it. She's amazing. If you haven't watched it, I think you'll find her interactions with Mark Ruffalo. He's also an up-and-coming actor, you know? I think he played Hulk. I think it was in a series like Avengers or something. I don't know. But, pretty nice guy. But they're together. They just awesome. But after the success with casting Nell, honestly, and Sean shared honestly, that he was thinking about that he would most likely hire someone who's sighted to portray blindness. But I'm like, we're casting Nell, or casting this young child. Let's see what's possible. And he's like, I think we can do it. I think we can. Let's see what we can find. So we did an international search a couple times over. And going through, and the first round, we didn't find the right person. We found some good people. To lead a show, you have to have really good skills in the world of acting. And not everyone who's a good actor means they're right for that part. So finding that person who fits, we found this young woman, Aria Mia Liberti, who was at Penn State University doing her PhD in rhetoric. You know, I had to look up what rhetoric was at the time. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And she had done a fellowship in the UK, so she was doing an accent in her audition, and we're like, whoa, is she British? And then she spoke, and we're like, no, she's not. Okay. And funny story, that Stephen Knight, the writer, met her for the first time when we were doing a screening in New York, and he goes, where in the UK is she from? I go, she's from the U.S. And I was like, we've been telling you guys. It's pretty widespread. But she did such a great job and came on and you know, figuring out how to work on a set. And she did all of her own stunts. So the scene where she's being, like, drowned, like, shoved underwater, that was Aria. Like, we teared up because we were worried about her, because she stayed in that moment, like, crying and screaming, even between takes. And we really thought she was drowning. I was like, we need to stop this. And she's like, no, I'm just staying. Well, we're like, at least between takes, let us know you're okay. Please. So working on it, and Aria's very low vision, legally blind, guide dog user. She's learned Braille as a kid. She's not a good Braille reader. You know, I helped coach her a bit on Braille. Her Braille skills are a little lacking, but she does read Braille. So she wanted to scrub, and I made sure. And when it came time, as we filmed this show, over 4 episodes, we spent 5.5 months in Europe filming, in Hungary and France. And when it came time with the audio description, because of C, I did not write the audio description. Joe did not write the audio description. That's not what I do. On season 2 of C, after going to conventions before and after season 1 of C, prior, going to the conventions and talking to people, getting reactions and hearing about the audio description, I was like, there are people voice that we were missing some things, like about the intimate moments between people in descriptions. And I was like, I came back from the conventions thinking, I want to change that. So I was like, Apple, big fruit company. Hey, fruit company, I want to help with the audio description. And they're like, okay, whatever, Joe. And I kept saying it over and over again. And then they're finally like, okay, Joe, we hear you. You want to help with the audio description. I'm like, I don't know what that process is, but I want to help with it. So working with the audio description team that was creating it, I wrote, my assistant and I went through every episode, and we went through all the edits, because I help on the edits for our shows and films, as deciding what goes in. I'm on set every day, seeing every take, so I know what takes might be better. And we look for, it's a happy medium, whether it's the acting, the blindness skills, what we're catching in shot. And even with Aria, like on set, as a person who's legally blind, she uses her feet a lot, and she's barefoot, and cameras don't catch your feet quite often. And if you're talking, often your shot is higher. It might even be a close-up. So if she's using some kind of skill to do something, I want to help tell the story to the audience so they know how people who are blind are doing things. They don't get it, guys. I'm saying we're a small population. They don't get it. But I help the projects translate it to the camera so they do get it. So she might be using her feet to find the edge of the carpet to, like, you're not using your cane in your home, right? You've been there every day. But she might landmark and use the back of her hand. If we're not catching something, she might gently touch something to show where she is in a large space, or if she's in a hurry, you move differently. There's familiar touch versus unfamiliar touch. Oh, 1 minute. Okay, thank you. I love to talk, guys, if you didn't notice. Yeah. But I want to say that it was the dream to work on a show like this where Aria got to be the lead actor, the child version, and I'm working behind the camera. It's even less common to be behind the camera as a person who's blind or low vision. And there are some directors who are blind or low vision. There's some producers and writers who are blind or low vision. There are not a lot of us. There are some composers, some sound design folks, but there are more and more. And it's a great opportunity. I know the labor market information. I come from the world of vocational rehabilitation. Doesn't show a lot of great outcomes, but that's because we've never had the training or opportunity. So there are programs for actors, and there are more programs from Sony, Netflix, about hiring persons with disabilities behind the scenes as well as in front of the camera. CBS has in front of the camera. I know NBC Universal was here earlier in the week. But if you have an opportunity, you should take it. And I want to say thank you for allowing me to talk about our project and what we were able to do. But I also want you guys to continue to voice your opinion, because it's not my opinion, it's our community's opinion that matters most. Thank you all.
Beautiful. Thanks, Matt.